This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 569 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Community Preservation Committee meeting held Thursday, June 17, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. All 9 of the committee members were in the municipal building, along with the town administration personnel, some of the public. Some others of the public joined via the conference bridge. Links to the key topics covered here are included in the show notes. The recording runs is about 50 minutes, so let's listen to the Community Preservation Committee meeting held Thursday, June 17.
All right, being at 5 o'clock, I'm going to call the meeting to order. Our first order of business is going to be approval of minutes from May 28, 2021. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any comments, discussion, additions, subtractions? Okay, being none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, none. The next item is historical tours date discussion. Jamie?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So originally we were thinking June right now, but obviously tonight's main agenda item popped up. And so we just wanted to talk with the committee. We've had the overview on Recreation Department. We've had the overview on Open Space. The next two we have set up are for the fall. And just wanted to get kind of the input as to what the committee thought would be helpful. I was thinking instead of having a big presentation coming in here, you know, my thought was if people wanted to, we might want to take a little bit of a tour of some of the you know, actually see the places that we're talking about that where money would probably most likely be requested right out of the gate, meaning the museum, certainly the cupola is a project that we've been waiting, we've applied for so many grants, and if you look at that museum from the other side of the street, you know, it's like stunning right now with the bunting outside, and you look up and you see the paint that needs to be done, and it's perfect community preservation project. And then there's the Washington Street Church, the old museum. We did do an open house there for neighbors about 3 years ago. I don't know how many people have been in there recently. We just did a very comprehensive study on that parcel about what the renovation cost would be. It might be helpful for the group to see how difficult that's going to be once you go inside. The Red Brick Schoolhouse, any other parcels people think that may be of interest, in addition to possibly I've gotten calls from Jim Johnson about the Oliver Pond home, which has been for sale over on the corner of West Central and over near the Sunoco station. So I'm open to any ideas, but I thought while we were all here, we could try to work on either a date or what folks might think might be helpful. And if folks want a presentation, we can certainly have the staff and the volunteers work on that, but I thought it might be a little bit more fun to go see them. So it's just a thought. So I just wanted to get some feedback from everybody.
Anyone have any thoughts on that?
I feel it would be most helpful to go and visit the sites because we can see firsthand what needs to be done and get a better idea of what would be most beneficial. So I'd be open to going to visit the actual sites.
Okay.
I agree with that.
So, Jamie, is that something that you'd want to do with the group or have people individually try to do that?
We could do them in smaller groups. I think we'd still probably, for publicity's sake, I mean, they're all open to the public anyways. The church over Washington Street isn't open, but we have had open houses in there. The staff definitely needs to be there for that because there's some places you should step. going upstairs, you know, may not be the best thing in the world either. But it does give a lot of context into, I think, the potential. Or we could do it all in one day, you know, one afternoon, one morning, you know, and just go as a group, you know, and at least allow everybody to converse. And we could just basically publish them as open houses, but at least everybody could have a little bit of an introduction to those issues.
So do you think it would be a good idea if you gave us some times of work for you and people could, like, sign up for one or the other of those?
You want to do? Yeah, absolutely. We could do a sign-up list. Sure.
Yeah.
Do folks want to wait until the fall? Do you want to do them over the summer? Weekdays, weekends? I mean, I mean, there's no big rush into this. I think doing them in September would be more than fine if that's okay with everybody.
Yep. Sounds good to me.
Are there any bit, I mean, we could do it maybe on a couple Friday mornings. Would that work? If I gave the dates out far enough in advance, at least people could at least book it on their calendars.
Yep.
Yes.
In September, mornings and early afternoons wouldn't work for me.
Okay.
Because I'll be working.
Okay.
So, yeah, but other than that.
Middays?
Like mid-afternoon would work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll try to come up with a deck. We'll maybe put out three different dates. Maybe what we'll do is we'll put out three different dates and we'll just publish all those. And if anybody else from the public wants to come, they're more than happy to come. Okay, great.
Any thoughts on that?
Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
Jim,
get I don't have the dates off the top of my head now, but we'll put them together and send them out.
Come on.
I know. September 8th. <No.
laughs> So you said a couple of presentations for September. Is one of them the Historical Commission?
That would be, I think, included in this. I think what I would ask, I mean, if the Historical Commission, Phyllis, really wants to come in and do a PowerPoint, I'm trying to save the work of doing the PowerPoint by just actually showing up at the facility and then...
I really think that Mary Olson, the chairman of the Historical Commission, would like to come in and explain things.
Would she rather do it at the museum?
And
show people? No?
You could check with her either the PowerPoint or the tour. It might be hard for the tour with her where she's working.
I'll talk to her about it.
You'll reach out to her?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
I've been talking every other day. Since she got back from the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
So, I'll reach out to Mary and talk to her. Absolutely.
Okay. Anyone else on that? All right. Our next item is Chapter 61A, Town's Right of First Refusal to Purchase Approximately 70 Acres of Land off Maple Street, approved as Maple Hill Definitive Residential Subdivision. Discussion and vote on recommending use of CPA funding for purchase to the town council. Jamie?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. So I think I've seen many of your faces on some of the other meetings, either at the council meeting last week. I'm gonna try to go through this presentation really quickly. It's been out there. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with it. We went to Finance Committee last night. They gave a unanimous approval to move this forward to tonight. Just by way of background, the vote tonight to recommend this to the Town Council for purchase is a requirement of purchasing the property. The Council cannot buy this with CPA money if the Community Preservation Committee does not vote in the affirmative. So I'm going to try to go through this. It's not too long, but just so we're all on the same page. So this is a bit of the process to date. The Planning Board did approve a subdivision in December. After all of the requisite appeal periods and whatnot, we did receive the purchase and sale from the landowner on May 5th. We have reviewed it at a staff level, and all the staff have signed off that it is a bona fide offer that has fulfilled all the obligations under statute. Last week, June 9th, was the presentation before the council where they had the official public hearing. There is a public hearing required under statute on any right of first refusals. The town has 120 days to exercise that right of first refusal. In this case, that's September 2nd of this year. The parcels, and I do have some maps, so people you'll be able to see it visually, but the parcels have been mostly in Chapter 61B. I think most people know this because of the trail networks, and the landowner has been kind throughout the years through their family history to allow people to go enjoy that piece of land. But they did enroll it in Chapter 61A, which is really just a formality about the ratio of how much property taxes one pays under the various statutes. And who knew, unless you have this stuff, you never heard of the Farm Evaluation Advisory Committee at the state level who sets those property tax rates on an annual basis. The price of the parcels is $4.59 million. So it's 69.6 acres. I've labeled out here the parcel IDs. Probably the most critical piece of this that is new news to many is the second bullet point here. At the end of Kimberly Ave, there's a 4-acre parcel that's there that that was part of the approved subdivision. But that piece of land, one, is not enrolled in 61. It's owned by a different landowner. And that parcel can never be in Chapter 61, because to be enrolled in Chapter 61, you need to have a minimum of 5 acres of land. That parcel is 4 acres of land. And so that parcel, those 4 acres at the end of that cul-de-sac on Kimberly, is not part of this proposal, and it's not, at this point, in play for a purchase from the town, which is a key point, because a lot of folks on that road certainly showed up at a lot of the planning board hearings. Here's a bit of an overview. There are some slides that we put up there after this that I'm gonna blow through that focus in a little bit more. So on the left, here's the aerial in context to the road network, Hancock up here, Bridle, Kimberly down here on the left. As you can see, here's the 4 acres right here. That is not part of it. So everything that's inside that dark red line is within game. The 69 acres, or 68 is this huge piece here, and then you see these hashtags, these lines. The landowner did come in last month before the purchase and sale was offered, and did carve out and has recorded those with the Registry of Deeds. And so that 1.2 acres is a part of the subdivision. Those were enrolled in Chapter 61. And so that 1.2 acres is a part of the proposal. There's just a little bit of a closer view of the map up onto the Hancock neighborhood. The aerial view up near Newell Drive in Hancock. There's the lower half right there, and a little bit more, a little closer view off of Bridle and High Ridge. And of course the aerial, because we love maps and we can't get enough of them, we just have them all over the place. So a quick overview, as you can see on this map, a broader one, the green parcels, the dark green are town open spaces. We have on here some labels with Dacey Field in context of the broader neighborhood. The Metacomet land by the Metacomet Land Trust is in yellow. And there's some additional Chapter 61 parcels that people can see over here. We'll get to a little bit more in a minute that are in pink. Certainly, I don't think it's any secret to anybody, there's tremendous opportunities here, being the proximity to downtown, to do some incredible trail development, sidewalk, bike lane connectivity. We just became a complete streets community, so Mike Maglio, our town engineering department, DPW, is working on 15 large projects by that program to look at creating the town of Franklin's own Franklin Greenway, which is similar to an Emerald Necklace in Boston, and those kind of networks like the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail in Acton. So we are trying to look out over the next 20 years at Franklin and figure out where open spaces, bike lanes, sidewalks, and where we can connect people for pedestrian access and all that stuff. Here's the three key pieces. This was another question that came up very often. Here are the three main access points up on, here on Hancock, over here on High Ridge, and down here on Bridle Path. Again, critical to note, there is not an access point to this piece of land through the Fitzgerald property off of Kimberly. It's also important to note, because we've been saying this a lot due to the subdivision and planning board process, this piece here in pink will remain in Chapter 61, which is the Lavasti property, the remaining 13 or so acres of their house. That does include the home and the barn that you can see from Maple Street, but there is no access to this land off of Maple Street. We have not costed out, this did come from the Finance Committee last night. They asked, well, what's the cost of maintaining it? What's the cost to town? We have not done any of those calculations, primarily because when you buy a piece of open space like this, generally speaking, there's at least some sort of long-term master plan, if you will, about what you're gonna do with the land. Some people sometimes buy this and they turn it into ball fields, sometimes they don't. I think that the nature of the old growth forest that's there, I think the commentary has led us to believe that this is just a great open space that should be left as is. And so there's probably gonna be a minimal cost to the DPW to maintain it. But like any major land purchase, especially when you're in Chapter 61, where you don't have the flexibility of master planning that out for a year, you only have 120 days to act, you know, we have not been able to do that. But we would certainly look at that, those costs down the line if there was some. As we always know, our good old-fashioned DPW is ready to go. This certainly represents one of the last largest parcels in town remaining for, and I put in quotes, open space. If you look at a lot of the other Chapter 61 lands and towns, they're agricultural. If you look at the large tracts left in town, a couple of them are golf courses. And then a few others are really major agricultural parcels. They're really just as simply, and a couple camps I should also mention, certainly Country Day and Hyacinth, which are both enrolled in Chapter 61. But in terms of just a woody forest, some meadows, this really is probably one of the last big pieces of this size left in Franklin. And there is an open space master plan. I put a link in this presentation. Many of you have been involved in that process over the years, but if you look at Goal 2, Objective 2.2, the Conservation Commission in 2017 and the Conservation Department completed one of the goals, which was a Chapter 61 analysis. So I provided a link in this document to that, and Maple Hill scored the highest of all parcels in that evaluation criteria. The master plan certainly prioritizes open space, and for many of you that follow the council closely, both my predecessor and myself, the council always put on our annual evaluation goals for the town administrator to be proactive in setting out open space preservation. So this is the, I cut out the key piece of the 61 analysis from 2017. As you can see on the top, there's a point score and the Blasty property scored the most. And ultimately, people are going to say, well, why did it score the highest? You can look in the right-hand column. This is not a definitive number of potential housing units. This is based off basic analysis of current zoning with what was possible. Now, as we know from the planning board process, 70 units was not possible on this parcel. Wetlands, buffer zones, excuse me, perk tests, fire truck radius, where you're going to put snow, all of the issues the Planning Board and Conservation Commission go through, essentially whittled that down to, I believe it was 58 homes, but the purchase and sale actually was less because the Fitzgerald property was left off, so it's actually 57 homes under the actual land that we're purchasing. But the potential housing units and the evaluation criteria in that report, which the evaluation criteria is fairly standard across most cities and towns. It evaluates potential development threat, it evaluates flora and fauna, it evaluates proximity to other open spaces, the potential to convert to recreation lands, passive recreation lands. It's a fairly boilerplate evaluation criteria that's used by most towns in their open space plan analyses. And the Conservation Commission did not use anything but the standard evaluation that is part of the industry standard on this thing. The real issue here that set this one up above the other ones, as you can see, number two, Franklin Country Club, the potential for 46 units, but the likelihood of that ever selling is very minute, and then turning into housing is probably potentially even less. That's certainly a little bit out of my pay grade to answer that question, but I'm just pointing out the real reason why Maple Hill scored the highest was absolutely because of this column to the right and the development potential there. So the town has three choices. The first option is to exercise the right of first refusal. The town would use $1.559 million in cash from the sale of the 2017 Pond Street sewer bed sale. Very few people remember that. I didn't, for obvious reasons, because I think when that land got sold, those of you that watched, there was a concerted effort of, that's not really going to be a piece of land we want to have recreation on. It's right next to 485. It was great for development. And here we are 5 years later, 4 years later, that parcel brought in not only this amount of money for the sale, but brought in new growth. And brought in investment on that property over there, which is great for the town. But here we have what would be considered seed money towards a large open space purchase. So that was a very good decision at the time. The town would not use any cash from the open stabilization fund. We could. We've had, I'm sure there'll be some questions about that. We've talked about this at some of the other meetings. We have almost 2.4 million left in that account. I believe this is not the last time we're gonna hear from a lot of citizens wanting to buy open space, so having some cash on hand, I believe is still a good idea. And CPA would be preferred from the staff perspective, because the general fund of the operating budget would be the other place you could really pay for this out of. We just approved the budget in May, and if this were to go in, and I'll show you the financials in a minute, you'd be putting that money in, and now the budget would be basically in the red going into FY22. So CPA would certainly be preferred. The second option is a debt exclusion ballot referendum, which would need to be completed by that date. So if there was a vote to raise taxes to buy this, you could, just like the high school, you debt exclude it. It is not an override. We'll talk about that in a minute. And the third option is to not exercise the right of first refusal. So the financial model I just went through briefly, we would use the cash deposit, and our recommendation from the staff is to look at a 20-year borrowing at the $3.03 million. I've labeled out the numbers here. That is approximately $212,000 a year of CPA money over 20 years. So it's about $212,000 a year over 20 years. That assumes a 3.5% interest rate. Note, last month we got a 1.44 interest rate because we have an exceptional bond rating. So we played a little conservatively just to make sure we're within budget. I think we'd like to believe that we went out to borrow this. We probably won't get 1.44, but we'd probably be more at 1.75 or 2%, in which that $212,000 number right here would decrease slightly. But being a little conservative and making sure that the public is aware that the cost is there, we did assume a 3.5% interest rate just in case, because I read the news and, you know, things seem to be ticking up a little bit, so I'm just saying.
That was a question.
Yeah.
Do municipal rates scale with just general interest
rates? Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because we're a lot more guaranteed than the private market. Uh-huh. So, just for clarity too, I don't want to go way deep into finances here, but we actually wouldn't borrow the money until January. We cannot borrow the money this month. We cannot borrow it in July. There's times at which you can borrow money, and it's a very, very laborious and extensive process for the treasurer collector to go out to our bond rating agencies and get the appropriate documentation. So just letting you know, it wouldn't be until the fall anyways. We would still pay cash in the interim, but we wouldn't actually go out to borrow until later. So you'd be borrowing later in the fall. Maybe it's 2% by then. Hopefully we'd still get a 1.44. Nonetheless, the town does have plenty of capacity to certainly pay for this. The total dollars are $3.3 million for principal and $1.2 million for interest. As I mentioned, these are estimates. Full sample of the pay scale is here for anybody who really wants to put on their glasses. I just put it out there for the record. But really the column that, if you looked at this online later, is the right-hand column, which is the total annual amount, and you're looking at $210,000 to $212,000 a year. The second is a debt exclusion vote, the second option, which I mentioned, which require an election. A debt exclusion is not an override. When people do this, just like a building, you raise taxes for that purpose, and when the borrowing is paid off, that tax sunsets. I will say, this is going to, if the town did choose to do a debt exclusion, this is a very, very cramped timeline. And with mail-in balloting not fully assured by statute yet, I think we're getting into some rough waters. Mail-in balloting and early voting are mandatory through June 30th. I've been told that the legislature will correct that. But adding in that element to a vote over the summer, in my opinion, is going to be extremely difficult, very confusing, and it's just a joke, but it's not the way I hope that my summer goes. And there's a presentation on debt service here that we put in the presentation the treasurer collector did earlier this year about debt capacity for the town. What if the town does not purchase the land? The town declines the right of first refusal, the subdivision now officially can move forward. Just to remind folks, it's multiple phases over an estimated 8 to 10 years. The first phase is 20 homes, the second phase is 23 homes, and the final phase is 15 homes as approved by the planning board and conservation boards. The town will receive about $500,000 in off-site mitigation from those hearings. And the town will receive the property tax revenue from the homes. People can model that out. It's very difficult to do right now because of the insane real estate market. We might say those are $750,000, $800,000, $850,000 homes. In reality, they may be more, and who knows, in 5 years, they could be worth a lot less. So it's difficult to predict the property tax revenue. I will say this, though, no matter how you model that out based on our tax rate, even if it was $1 million a year, $1 million home is still a net loss per child that goes to the school district. It's painful to say because we got a great school district, but that's the truth. And those homes over there are not one child per home. They're just not.
And Jimmy, that only accounts, what you're saying, only accounts for education. It doesn't count police, fire.
Police, fire,
roads,
all the other
stuff.
Snow.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. So I just put that out there. We talked as a staff about modeling this out, and I think a lot of the staff just felt uncomfortable about hypotheticals and guessing. But we do know, even if you sold out $1 million at our tax rate right now at 1465, you know, you're only gonna get 14 grand per home, and the cost per pupil for a student is 15,500, you know, average. You're already in the red. Right out of the gate, every child that shows up, you're in the red, in addition to the snow removal, police, fire, senior center, library, recreation, et cetera. So this is the summary slide. To kind of round it out, the town has the right of first refusal. We have 120 days till September 2nd. The cost is $4.59 million. It says the town administrator, but really it's the staff recommendation as well, is to look at option one as a first resort. $1.5 million in cash to borrow the rest under CPA. You're trading a poor piece of property that brought in good economic development on one for a gorgeous piece of property. And as I reminded the Council and Finance Committee, it's not often you get this opportunity when property tax bills with the surcharge for CPA are going to show up in people's mailboxes in July. And the town has a right and has the ability to make a very large policy decision. When those property tax bills hit in people's homes, they're gonna see $80, $100 on their bill, and here's an excellent way to show them the power of community preservation with their vote from last November to say we're already investing and here's how it works. Again, very rare to get this opportunity where right out of the gate you can do something. Because you can borrow against future revenues, and we've done all the math, I think that from our perspective is a powerful statement. We all know that this stuff is once in a lifetime. Once the land's gone, it's gone. And I would close up by saying that at the public hearing, the council last week, it was clear there was a unanimous vote from the council to support this. And the finance committee last night also voted unanimously to recommend the purchase of this property. So that's the presentation, and obviously happy to have any discussion or answer any questions. Thank you.
Before we do that, Mr. Pruitt, is there something you'd like to say or add?
I just want to say that I'm in total agreement. The planning board listened to this for a little over 10 months.
Could you go to the microphone, please?
I'm sorry. I should know better, right?
Takes a while to get back over,
though. Tony Padula. This was before the planning board for 10 months for subdivision, and it was part of this process. I was aware that this could possibly happen, that the town could purchase this piece of property, and the planning board did too. But it was, I think the planning board did its job. We had to approve what was best for the town in case the town decided not to buy the property. And I think we came up with a good subdivision plan. But I'm definitely happy that we purchased it.
Thank you.
Okay.
So what we're gonna do next is we're gonna entertain a motion for one of the three options. And if you disagree with that one option, you need to when we go around and ask people to speak, you need to make that known, because if we vote on that first option and it passes, your opportunity is gone to say something different. Okay, so does everyone understand that? And then once we've had a motion and a second, if anyone has a question of the town administrator, you can ask them at that point in time. Okay?
So, just a point of information. So we're going to vote on the subject we want to speak about, but not...
No, no. Someone's going to make a motion on to approve one of those three options.
Without a discussion?
No, no. It's just a motion. We have to have a motion first. Someone seconds it. Then we'll have a discussion. And
on,
then we'll,
on each item?
If someone so chooses.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
Yep. Does everyone understand that?
Yep.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion then.
So moved.
You don't have to.
Which
option?
Motion option one.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, so there's a motion to approve the purchase of the property under those given circumstances where the town's going to put in roughly $1.6 million,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to use the CPA to borrow the remaining funds. So that's what the motion is. Is there any discussion?
I have a question, a clarification.
Yes.
So we're going to get somewhat like $2 million a year. Is that, I mean, remember we were talking about early on, right? That's sort of the number we're getting.
It would be something, we think it's somewhere between 1.3 and 1.7, I would say.
Okay.
Conservatively.
Okay, so out of that number, we're looking to contribute 200 thousand a year off of that number. So we still have $1.5 million elsewhere.
Correct.
That's just the point I wanted to make. That's
right. Yep. Jamie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if you go on the approved budget of $1.379 million that the Community Preservation Committee recommended and the council did approve as a kind of sample budget for FY22, based on estimated revenue, we believe you'll get 1.379 in local money, not including the state match. If you calculate it out, 212,000 out of that 1.379 is about 14%. Now, if the interest rate dips a little, now you're talking like 12 or 13%. So you already have to spend 10% of your money on open space anyway. So essentially, you know, just give it a couple percentage points, just work with me here. I'm doing my best Jeff Nutting rounding, but I'm trying to be specific. You know, ultimately, there's your open space commitment, your minimum commitment
correct.
For 20 years.
Correct.
And there's still all the extra money for the other things that we're committed
correct.
To.
Correct.
That's sort of the point.
That would be an additional 87% of those revenues, less the requirement of historic and open space. Housing.
Wayne?
Yeah, so in other words, this is money being spent from the CPA.
Yes.
And we're not, there's no debt, you mentioned debt exclusion, none of that.
No.
Nope. Okay.
Not under this circumstance.
Right, okay. Because I'd be totally opposed to that.
Okay.
Right.
Correct. Joe?
You mentioned that we're going to pay for it up front now because we can't get the financing. Where's that money coming from?
It's really just a cash flow issue. The treasurer collector has the ability to do that. When you go get the approval from the financial agencies, it's really, if you think of it as a long-term process, so say it takes 4 months to go through a full borrowing. You get the approval up front, but then you still have to go through the interest rate, you still have to go through Standard & Poor's, you still have to go get your bond rating, we still have to do the, I have to do the phone calls with all the rating agencies. That process, as painful as it is to sound, but I think you're probably familiar with it, Joe, it can take months to go through that. So you get the okay up front, and then you formally go out and do the bonds, you go out and see the markets and all that stuff. So they do a whole preliminary and later, but in terms of a cash flow, we have the authority to do that. The treasurer collector has the authority to do that under Mass law once we get the actual votes and approvals from the necessary boards. Given our financial conditions, this is really more of a timing issue because of the crossover in fiscal years as well. So I'm trying to stay way out of the financial depths.
To the chair, then, are we in a position just to write a check for it and not finance the product and save the town $1 million in finance charges?
Yeah. It is a good question. We're not in that position. because eventually we are gonna have to go out and borrow it. If we were to do that, to your point, just to illustrate that scenario, what you would do, because you do have cash on hand, you would take the 2.4 million in open space stabilization money. You could then do the 1.5 million in the Pond Street, so it's about 4 million. You'd still have to go find another $500,000 somewhere in cash to be able to go do that. And I don't have that money. So you have to go out and borrow for that additional $500,000 no matter what. The downside to that, of course, is then you're stuck with no cash anywhere. And the next time something comes up, you may not be in a position in the global marketplace, you may not be in a position to get a 2% interest rate. So somebody asked this last night, Joe, actually, at the finance committee meeting, well, why don't we add another $1 million of cash into it? And again, point to save some interest. Part of it is in with Chapter 61 is so unpredictable. The last Chapter 61 that came before the council was in 2017. There were two. There was a Maple Hill parcel across the street, which is now homes, 10 acres. They declined. And there was a Prospect Street proposal over at Schmidt's Farm that was declined. And the reason why those were declined is, at the time, the town had no tools in its toolbox to do any purchase of any kind. No CPA, no cash in the stabilization fund, etc. So ultimately, we could go another 5 years with not another Chapter 61 parcel coming in. We could go another 6 months. We could go another 5 years, another 10 years, 20 years. We don't know when they're going to come in. So taking advantage of the low interest rate is financially sound because you're taking a gamble of the dice to say, now that's a gamble of the dice doing it this way too. We're doing it using the best information we have. If I was Nostradamus and I could predict this out, I would be able to figure that out. But this at least model leaves, it's affordable under CPA, it maxes your open space commitment, minimum commitment you have to do, and the town is still in a position to have 2.4 million in the event something else came available and interest rates jacked up to 4 or 5, 3.5, you know, whatever they are, in 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years, whenever there's another opportunity. You could be paying a lot more percentage of CPA out of interest under that model. So I don't pretend, by the way, for the record, that I've got this 100% figured out perfectly, and I'm the one that's right and everybody else is wrong. If there are other opportunities that people want to explore, we're certainly happy to look at them for sure.
Joe, I'm sorry to take up all your time. I'm probably gonna have a lot more questions than most because I did spend 10 months to a year on this project along with the rest of the board. Hundreds of hours sitting at my kitchen table studying that project to make sure we did the right thing. So I have a lot of questions. One of them would be and again, I don't want a negative feeling this. I am 100% in favor of purchasing this parcel. I just want to get a little educated here. 52 homes versus 92 down on the Pond Street. Why would 52 be a problem, but we sold the land out for 92 homes that can be infiltrated with children also? So why is that a better investment that we sold that parcel versus 52 homes?
I think it's just the quality of the land. At the end of the day, I think it's the quality of the land.
I agree with that, but this children's situation doesn't matter whether it's that side of town or this side. You can still have 2-3 kids per unit.
Absolutely.
Down on Pond Street. So that was one question.
Yeah.
Another big question would be, where we were involved in this large parcel, a lot of the egress was from Maple Street. So when I was under the impression when a developer comes forward with a parcel of land to the 61 project, we get the choice to purchase that complete approved project. What gives them the right now, after we've spent all that time approving one large parcel, that they can carve out pieces they want and say, okay, we'll sell you this? I was always under the impression that if it was going to happen, we would own what we approved as part of the purchase price. I didn't realize that there'd be no more access off Maple Street. And at this point, if that's just that way, the only golden road to this product is through Bridle Path.
That's right.
Which brings up the issue. 20, 30 people want to go down there on a Saturday afternoon, Sunday now, because now it's public, everybody knows. There is no place for these people to park. They're going to be parking all up and down the roads in front of people's cars, getting out with their dogs. I'm sure not very pleasurable for the neighbors. So what board would be in charge, or would it be the CPA, to ensure that we put a nice parking lot at the end of that road, maybe some lighting, because it gets dark early in, you know, in the winters, to ensure that people are going to go snow skiing, it gets plowed, and people have access, maybe some signage off of Lincoln Street, because, again, I'm in favor of purchasing this 100%, but not as just an extended backyard of the adjacent neighbors. It's a, the whole town's spending $5 million on this, and we're all going to want to use it. And as of right now, as if we purchased it, there's really no way to enter that property properly.
So basically, you have to make it usable.
Make it usable for all the residents of Franklin. And who would be in charge? The CPA? Would we design that? Or how, who would design parking lots and signage and access?
I think that would be, the town would do that, and then you'd come to us for the finance. Would be another project presented to us.
Would that be a separate project?
Yes.
Yes.
That would, that's why I mentioned the word. I mean, frequently these terms are used. They get conflated because we have a town master plan, but it's not uncommon for there to be, in this case in Franklin, the likely entity would be the DPW and the town engineering department would end up doing a conceptual master plan of what the parcel would be used for. Exactly what you just said, Joe. Signage from Lincoln Street. Like I had mentioned earlier, the engineers are already working on a complete street study of what kind of capital projects, about where you could connect to, you know, where are the sidewalks, can you create your own freedom trail, if you will, markings to try to put up appropriate signage. And the parking issue is absolutely a huge one, because you're absolutely right. I think Bridle Path by far is going to be the most trafficked parcel with people going down there. It's public land now, it's not private. The landowner, by the way, for years, there's no obligation under 61B that you have to let everybody freely just go wherever they want. The landowner could have cut off areas, don't go here, go over here. They didn't. And so they were very generous throughout the years. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of curiosity seekers when you spend this kind of money. They're going to go down there. And at the end of the cul-de-sac at Bridle and probably Hancock as well, there'll probably be a lot of people that... That may park there. That is going to be an issue the DPW will have to look at, I believe, and look at connectivity options. I also think it's about, do people want to use, what kind of a size parking lot do we need at the end of that extension? And then it gets into, well, do we need to redo the road? I think through the planning board process, traffic was a big concern that certainly came up quite a bit, but also the condition of Bridle Path was a big condition, and I believe some of the mitigation money, if I'm not mistaken, from was to redo Bridle Path. So that's a cost to the town, right? So there will have to be a longer term management plan regarding this. So those are all excellent questions. And like whether they come back to CPA for the money, excuse me, whether you come back to CPA for the money or not, we'll have to see what the price tag is first.
In your opinion, how soon would residents be able to access that? I realize it's not going to be done in a day. A forecast of, obviously that's a large amount of money to sit there, and I'd like to see the residents of Franklin enjoy that, but also have an idea of when we'd be able to access that property.
So the town attorney tells me, excuse me, there's about a 90-day turnaround time after the final vote with the registry of deeds and the recording. So I think you're looking at, you know, once all the paperwork and everything's recorded and whatnot, you're probably looking at the fall. Whether or not people can use it now, I think the landowner has been quite generous, even through this time frame, right? Right now, while this is going on, everybody on the call, all the residents that came to the bridal, that came to the planning board, you know, they've been waiting for, I had public records requests from people for the purchase and sale in January, waiting for, find out. Landowner didn't kick anybody off. Right? So I think if people were to go out there now, I think it would be, I don't see any problems, but it'll be until probably September before the paperwork's done.
The only thing I'm a little disappointed about is the maple parcel wasn't included. Being a little sympathetic to the Bridle Path people, they were always concerned about traffic and people traveling down the road. They may not have as much traffic as was forecasted, but it would have been nice to have some access off of Maple Street to kind of 50-50 that a little bit, and it's kind of pretty much funneled it right down to that being the main access.
No question. And one other thing I'd mention is because it did come up at one of the other hearings, you guys should all know, is so in Chapter 61, if somebody had their land in Chapter 61 right now, they could walk in and say, is the town willing to buy this land? Where the roadblock goes up legally is when they enter into an agreement with a third party, i.e. contractor, developer, engineer. That's when the town cannot work with that landowner at all. So while you're going through the permitting process, we are restricted, as the landowner is restricted, cannot entertain or talk to the landowner and see if we can get a better price. That was the number one question I got throughout the whole planning board. Hey, why don't you go over there and do this and ask the landowner if you can do that, and why don't you give him a buzz and see if he'll give it to you for a little less, and you know, and these can't absolutely firmly legal. So between the point at which a landowner enters in with a builder and the end of the permitting process, when we get the purchase and sale, we are completely prohibited from talking to anybody. And the landowner can't come to me and say, you know, it's not going so well. You know, you think you could do this, and you just can't do it. Why I say that? Because the remaining piece that you're talking about, Joe, that extra 13 acres or the other acres, now the landowner, unless they enter into an agreement with a contractor for those remaining 13 acres, which I believe is the parcel with the house and the barn and the other ancillary structures, the landowner could come in and say, do you want the whole thing? What's, you know, what they, we could negotiate now. If Labasti went and got into with another contractor for the 13 acres and was going to develop that like he did across the street, I can't talk to them. So I'm just saying that there is a window. If the owner wanted to, they could come to me before they partner with another developer for those 13 acres. I don't know whether they're gonna do that or not. I don't have that intelligence. I don't know if the landowner plans on staying on the land. I don't know. The remaining parcel though is still enrolled in Chapter 61 of those 13 acres. The one that's not is the Kimberly Ave parcel, is not enrolled in Chapter 61 and never can.
So nobody knows what the original purchase and sale was for the original project that was approved and went through the town boards.
I'm not sure I understand, because that's the $4.59 million.
That's for the parcel excluding the 14 acres.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And the 4 acres. That's
but the
correct.
Original deal, because we saw it all on the site plans, included, I believe, those 14 acres, because it had access to Maple Street.
Right here.
Right, but
you're talking about this parcel.
That
right
parcel,
here.
I believe, was included with the original site plan.
Huh? Yeah. That's right, but you don't get to buy the whole thing. That's not how it works. Just like this parcel over here was included in the site plan as well. We don't get a bite of that apple.
So it's basically everything's been washed out, and you can forget all the site plan work, and basically someone just comes and says, listen, I have this piece of land for sale. And I want to sell.
No, because that parcel right there off Maple Street was not part of the subdivision. This piece right here, I mean, unless...
No, wait.
This right here was not part of the subdivision. Am I wrong?
I thought there was access off Maple Street.
Mr. Padula, if you want to go back to the mic, you clarify that. Okay.
Am I
think you just did.
Yeah, this was not part of the subdivision.
There never was part of it.
This part here at the hashtags, this 1.2 acres... That was part of the subdivision.
So the access to Maple Street was strictly off Kimberly.
That's correct.
But there was some conversation about some traveling at that one
but
time.
But I do believe because they were looking to permit a subdivision and housing development, and their access points to the property were difficult based on conditions, wetlands, whatever
okay.
else was going on, traffic studies.
Right, so
they were looking at all the options, but I think the landowner, if you know, and I'm speculating here completely, if the landowner was not able to get access in other areas.
Well, it's all coming back because there was talk about putting a bridge and it was wetlands.
Yeah, there's a bridge, right?
Like
yeah.
Yeah,
the wetlands are like over here, I think.
Correct, and they couldn't access it right off Maple. That'd be too Kimberly.
That's right.
That's right. It's all coming back.
You all set, Joe?
Yeah, I'm all set. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, there's been a motion made and seconded, and we'll do a roll call vote.
Okay, I vote yes that the CPC purchase this Maple Hill land. Chris?
Yes.
Mike?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Phyllis?
Yes.
Dave?
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes.
Wayne?
Yes.
It's unanimous. Are there any other comments? I'd like to just make a couple of quick ones. My opinion, and obviously by my vote, I was in favor of the first option. I don't think after getting the town to pass the CPA, we could go back to them and ask them for a debt exclusion. That would be, I just don't think there's any merit to that. And I also don't think there's any merit to not purchasing the land. I think we did the right thing here. My last comment is, all the people who sent me emails, I read all your emails, and as you can see by how the actions of this meeting went, I agreed with you, I just didn't have time to respond to everyone.
We all did.
We all did.
We all read it and appreciated it.
Yes, yes.
Does anyone have any other comments?
I just wanna say that I agree with you, that a debt exclusion would be bad optics for the CPA. I agree with you.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be us, but if we push it back, yeah.
With all I did, why did we do this in the first place?
Exactly. Anyone else? I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
Second.
Someone?
Someone's gotta make the motion.
Motion for adjournment?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.